Krug Champagne has an almost mythic status amongst champagne lovers, and with good reason. Perhaps you're one of the few to have ever drunk a bottle of their 1988 vintage, and then you'll know what I mean. And by the way, it's even a few years off from its peak. I asked Remy Krug about the firm's approach to making champagne, and in particular, why Krug is so unique.
Oh, quite simply because we want Krug to be special. You know, champagne is the among all wines, the ones where man has the biggest power, because we blend, we compose. Therefore, whatever we do results from choices, from willingness, from a commitment. So basically, we want Krug to be special. And we also know that people who love Krug expect it to be what it is, to be rich, intense, complex, you know, to have a lot of character, personality, but also to be very elegant and subtle and vibrant and lively in a way. So that's what we are committed to do when we choose our grapes, our casks for fermentation, our when we conduct our blending session and all that. I mean, we are always driven by something, which is to produce Krug for Krug lovers.
Can you tell me, Remy, a bit about how you make your Grand Cuvée, which is to all intents and purposes your equivalent to a prestige cuvée?
That should be, it is. So, you know, to satisfy this vision we have and this expectation from Krug drinkers, of course, we go through a certain number of choices. The first one, which is important, is the kind of grapes we use. And more than grapes, I mean, the terroir we buy from, the vineyards we buy from, and the plots and the farmers we contract with. And that is a mosaic that is extremely precisely chosen according to the instruments that we want to gather to compose the orchestra, so to speak. But there, just after that, the most important thing that I'd like to say about Krug and about the taste of Krug is the first fermentation in smaller casks. As it has been said and known and seen that we have at Krug retained the smaller casks for first fermentation since the days where Krug were founded in 1843. And the purpose of the cask fermentation is, of course, not just to respect tradition, because that's not a purpose in itself. It's no more to get any kind of wood character. We would hate to have any wood character into Krug, but it's the phenomenon of micro-oxygenation that develops as the wine is born in the cask, as the first fermentation takes place, and which actually will enhance the character of this vin clair, the single wine, born from the cask, and give it this expression of, you know, intensity, complexity, very wide spectrum amount of taste, flavors, dynamic, etc., which Krug is all about. So, as we say, every drop of Krug is born in the famous small cask. There is no aging whatsoever in the cask, because our wines stay in the cask from end of September to, at the latest, mid-December, like Christmas time. So there is no aging within those few weeks. It's too short to be called aging, of course. The third thing that actually needs to be said, and of course will be very specific to the Grand Cuvée, as you were asking about Grand Cuvée, is that is the blending process. We don't blend at Krug with any form of formula or recipe, like, you know, X percent of this or Y percent of that. It's not at all the way it works. We blend by tastings, and we define tasting after tasting and step after step and drop after drop, what we believe could be the right type of blend, and we taste and taste and taste again to fine tune and arrive at a decision. It takes about 2 to 3 months to build up that tasting process and arrive at a decision. And the originality with the Grand Cuvée is that we look for consistency of taste in addition to the kind of versatility and broad spectrum and multifacet character that Grand Cuvée is known for. And to achieve that, we blend up to 10 different years in every single Grand Cuvée. So when you blend all those many years, in addition to the different grapes, different vineyards, and different cru, etc., then you work on a symphonic orchestra or a very wide mosaic of ingredients that will form the global alchemy. And when you've done that you cannot possibly call it a non-vintage. It's a blend of vintages and not a non-vintage, so to speak. To top that all, and I hope I'm not being too long, but to top that all, there's a fourth point which I'd like to underline, which is the aging factor. Because if you have got the right grapes that you want, if you fermented in a small cask, if you blended as you want to do, etc., then you have to respect time, and you cannot release the wine before it's ready. So at Krug, our release time for Grand Cuvée is 6 years after bottling. For vintage, it's between anything between 10 and 15 years, but for Grand Cuvée, it's 6 years after bottling, so that the wine has taken time to grow and to get its unity and its complexity and expression, etc.
And in making your Grand Cuvée, you take the best grapes you have before you select them even for your vintage champagnes.
Well, you know, we don't think of best grapes in the sense, I'd be surprising you, because what we call best grapes is what we need for Krug, whichever Krug it is. In other words, the main choice here is between what we keep and what we reject, because each year we have to reject some wines that we don't like. And then when a young wine has qualified to stay with Krug and to enter one of our blends, we always work on the Grand Cuvée first, so that we give it the priority decision. And we secure that Grand Cuvée is composed as it needs to be to remain itself, etc. And we will only consider the vintage blend whenever we make one, which is, of course, not every year. We consider that vintage blend as second decision, not in order of quality, of course, but in order of priority. We want to secure Grand Cuvée first, and then if we can also produce a limited edition of a vintage or rosé or Clos du Ménil, like satellites that will actually, work around the Grand Cuvée being the main sun of the Krug galaxy, so to speak, then we do that. Because Grand Cuvée is so identical to Krug, people who love Krug love Grand Cuvée. They know it's 80% of our sales. It's what people refer to when they say, I'm a Krug lover, they drink Grand Cuvée. So we can't afford to create a hierarchy between our Krugs. And we give enormous pride and attention and obsession in securing that Grand Cuvée remains what it is.
So within your Grand Cuvée, assuming you're not declaring a vintage in a particular year, there will be some of your single vineyard wine, the Clos du Ménil. Is that correct?
Oh, there will never be any sort of large amount of that, because it's so minute that it doesn't exist in any large amount. But it is true that when we don't produce a Clos du Ménil as a single wine on its own, then the vin clair, the wine, the clear wine produced in the Clos du Ménil, becomes a fabulous reserve wine for the Grand Cuvées. So, yeah, I would think that in every Grand Cuvée you might have a drop of Clos du Ménil, but no more than a drop.
Many champagne producers rely on malolactic fermentation, which can add finesse, converting the harder malic acid into softer lactic acid. I don't think you use this. Why is that?
We don't care about malolactic fermentation. We don't induce it. We don't need it. We don't do anything about it, because we allow time to our wines to age. So our time is long. Grand Cuvée after 6 years, vintage after 10 to 15 years. So we don't need to rush anything, and we don't need malolactic fermentation. Now, this being said, we know that it happens. If you had asked me the question 20 years ago, or to my brother, or even my father, the three of us would have answered in total good faith that there is no malolactic at Krug. But it is not true. Indeed, we discovered since that it happens on its own when it wants, mostly in the reserve wine position. But we don't care. We don't do anything to favor it. We don't do anything to stop it. We just let nature does what nature wants to do, and that's it.
The role of reserve wines is an interesting one. What part do they play in making Krug?
The role of reserve wines for Krug is enormous, because there is absolutely no way Grand Cuvée would be as consistent as it is, and which I think everybody acknowledged, the consistency of Grand Cuvée, without proper reserve wines. I call our reserve wine tanks as our bank of treasures. It's an absolute treasure we have. Now, what we do is we put in reserve you know, strong voice wines. I mean, wines which have a strong personality, something very sometimes dramatic and clear that we believe will age, will have the potential to age and develop well over time. And because even in few drops, they will play their part in the global harmony of the blend whenever needed. We have in reserve today the very best plots, very best vineyards, going from 2004 back to 1990. We still have some 1990s, still Avis and Auges in reserve, waiting for their day to join a Grand Cuvée blend, which is incredible. Of course, we don't have a big quantity of them, but even a drop of that in a blend will actually play its role. So it's very important that each year, not only we choose the right wines from reserve to join the new blend that we are composing, but also that we resupply, we refurnish the reserves from the wines of the new year. And of course, we select wines which we believe have the potential to play a big role as reserve in the future. And it's an enormous task to do. It's very important. I often say, as a way to explain myself, that if we have a zero crop, if there was no grapes in a catastrophe year one day, we could still blend an absolutely stunning Grand Cuvée out of our existing reserves. Because not only you have a spectrum of different years, different vineyards, and it's like, again, a very wide mosaic, but also we need to have a fair amount of them. We need to keep much more of them that we need to use each year, so that each year we only take few of them in the blend and replace them. But it's kind of rolling over treasure over the time. So to us, it's absolutely vital. Just a word, if I may, is that as much as we love to ferment our wines in the small cask, we never age anything in wood here at Krug, and we never did. And our reserves are now kept in small stainless steel tanks so that they do not oxidate and they remain extremely fresh, yet mature over the time.
Champagne is often drunk on its own. What goes best with it, in your view?
Well, again, here I would not speak for champagne, but for Krug, because Krug is a different champagne that has its own identity and character. And my answer to people when say, you know, Remy, when is the best time to drink Krug? And I say, when you want, when you feel like it, when you can't resist. Because I think the best marriage, pairing with a glass of Krug is one's mood. And it is your mood and your friend's mood and the moment in which you will be that will actually make you wish to dream or wish to open this bottle. And okay. So it could be on its own. It could be as aperitif. It could be in the night. It could be on the beach. It could be for breakfast. It could be, and it could be also sitting down and having a nice meal or whatever, you know, and it could be in Europe, it could be in China, it could be in Japan, it could be with a Chinese food or no food, whatever. You know, I think we talk here about versatility and a situation which I think people have to make their own decision. I will never dictate somebody what he should do, nor would I tell him don't, except I have few don'ts, but they are only very few. But basically, I will encourage people to bring their best champagne into their own mood and their own life. And then everything would be possible.